Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Welcome to UFOs, Paranormal and Mystical Insights. I'm Ruth Anna Marcifio, and your other host is Steve Kapp. Hello, Steve.
Hi. Welcome, and we have Dudley from Texas with us, who appears to be very knowledgeable about UFOs. The general topic tonight was, sci-fi movies, UFO movies, and so on. Wherever you can bring in other insights, you know, that would be fine. We were going to all talk about our favorite movies, and I guess I can briefly start off with the 1951 version of The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is my all-time favorite movie in terms of the classic UFO movie. And it was very intelligently made. They didn't have all the special effects that they have today, but the whole theme of the movie, which was, you know, ending war on Earth and the emissary from another star system, always beguiled me. I don't know when I first saw it, although I am old enough to have, you know, seen it in the 50s. I don't recall having seen it at that time, but it had all the elements of a, it had the political elements, it had the technology, it had the spiritual aspect, and so I'll let you guys chime in with, you know, whatever you want, you know, to add to it. I imagine both of you have seen the movie. The remake is a good movie, but it can't compare to the original in my estimation in terms of a thought-provoking movie, but, you know, it wasn't a bad movie.
I never like remakes because it seems like things, so much is lost. If you have a classic, I don't mess with it.
It's very hard.
I would be one of the very few people who hasn't seen this movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still. I have heard about it.
Right.
Dudley, what about you? Have you seen it? How's it rank with you?
I've seen parts of it, but I believe it was they were trying to send a message during the movie. Wise, I think, was the director, producer. And what's interesting about it is if you look up who his advisor was to that movie, it was some of the top military people that were advising him about how to make that move. So that's an interesting part of it.
It is interesting.
Well, I've heard that a lot of these sci-fi movies have advisors in higher places or more secretive places than we would offhand think. So that would be no surprise.
Well, I believe, I believe in UFOs myself because I was at a military base in October 1973. And at the time, I didn't realize exactly what was going on, but through my investigation, connecting with military personnel, intelligence personnel, NASA people, I actually found out what was going on up there that particular time I was up there. And our base was being monitored by these aliens, saucers, flying saucers. They're real, and I think that it's been going on for a long time. But that's my my story on that. It's not really a story. It's reports been made to NASA here in Johnson Space Center, the FBI, and Houston, MUFON, Utah, worked through them, and plus the National UFO Reporting Center. So it's more of a report than a story.
Well, did you actually see them?
Yeah, I had to stop my car on Interstate 70 to let a saucer take off right in front of me. And it was a big one.
Wow. Well, what did it look like?
Just like in the movies, a saucer with a dome on it. It was at nighttime. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And I was traveling on I-70 back from California to the east. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, I had to stop in the middle of the highway and let this thing take off.
Could you tell us the size?
What's that?
Could you tell us the size, since it was right by your vehicle?
Yeah, I mean, it was either run into a UFO in the interstate highway or stop, and I was scared to death anyway, so I stopped and tried to stay as far away from it as I could.
Right, but how large was it?
I'd say it's about 200, at least 200 or 300 feet long and 100 feet high.
That's pretty big.
Yeah, that's
pretty big. Real big. Real scary is what it was.
Were there any lights on it?
No, just it just was putting out a red glow. You couldn't see any lights or anything. It was just a dome on top of a saucer, but I was above it. So I had like a bird's eye view. The saucer was rotating in one direction, and the dome was rotating in the opposite direction of the saucer. And it was putting out this red glow, which pretty much lit the whole night up, kind of like a full moon night, but it'd be more like a red. And
wow.
There was no other color. It was just powering up for takeoff. That's why it was glowing red, because it was getting ready to take off.
Wow.
After you made this sighting, did you have any physical either symptoms or a change in feeling?
Good question.
I would say I was just in a state of shock because my girlfriend was with me, and we just stood there and watched it, and we just couldn't believe it. It was just beyond belief. So, I mean, you stand there with your mouth hanging open and just...
Right.
Your eyes poking out, you know. And,
you got out of your car? You were so scared, but you got out of your vehicle?
Yeah, we got out and watched it take off.
But you had nothing like a sensation of, like, missing time or anything like that?
When you're in shock, you're just almost you're in a daze. And,
well, that's true, too.
And you're just... Like, we got back in the car and drove all the way to Denver. It's probably from where that location was, Green River, I would say it's probably 5 to 7 hour drive. And the whole way, we just barely talked. We just said, like, did you see that, you know, type thing. And it's just like, wow, you know. It was just unbelievable.
How has that?
I guess
that...
you might call it, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime event type thing.
How did that experience change your life, Dudley? I mean, from there on, did you have different ideas than you had had before?
I basically led a normal life. I didn't really talk about it that much because, you know, you tell your parents and your relatives and your friends, and they say, yeah, sure, whatever, most of them. And so you just go ahead and live a life. So, you know. Only about 5 years ago, not 5 years ago, about 2005, I was in a car accident on the seawall in Galveston and was almost killed. A Buddhist nun ran a red light. And when you're laying in the hospital intensive care, you start thinking about all the things that's happened in your life. And this was early 70s. Vietnam War was going on. War in the Middle East was going on. They were testing nuclear weapons, the Russians, and DEFCON 3 was activated. That's our highest state of nuclear readiness, and that's why the aliens were there. That's what the investigation turned up, was the aliens were there because they were monitoring our number one nuclear base at the time, the Utah Launch Complex up there at Green River, Utah.
That's what I was going to ask, because most of my knowledge in this area, living in the heart of New York, is New York City, is basically academic. But I've run across many statements that the UFOs seem to be attracted to sites which have nuclear facilities, nuclear material.
Yeah, the way I look at it, we live in an alien world, not just a human world. And
right.
The aliens are concerned about the nuclear weapons because they're the destroyer of worlds. And therefore,
right.
if we can not only destroy our world, we could destroy their world, then they're concerned about it. I'd be concerned about it.
Well, when you say their world, do you think their world is like a higher dimensional world than ours, which exists parallel to ours, or is it somewhere out in space?
Well, are you talking about interdimensional? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, right.
Right. I think, personally, I think these different, and there's a bunch of them. As far as I'm concerned, Earth has been a way station in space since the beginning of time. So we're talking about lots of different kinds of species of beings coming and going. And I think some could be interdimensional. Some may live here on the bottom of the ocean. And some may be coming from outer space. That could be all three.
Right. But in any case, any kind of a nuclear incident would definitely certainly affect them.
Yeah, I mean, for the first time in the history of man, we've now caught the attention of everybody in the neighborhood.
Right. That's consistent with what I've read. I'm sorry, Ruthann, go ahead.
I just wanted to get back to my previous question. Did this sighting change the way you viewed the world? Before that, would you have been...
No question about it. It affects your whole life. Is affected by it.
Okay, even though you didn't talk about it till recently, it gave you a different perspective on different...
Well, it gave me a different perspective when I awakened. And what I mean by awakened is I never really thought about it that much until after this accident. And the accident triggered my investigation, which one thing leads to another.
Okay. And so all that time, from the 70s till 2005, you really just put that whole thing on the back burner then?
On the back burner, just like you do anything else.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, you know you saw something, but who knows what's going on. But so you see, after this accident, I had to find out what's going on. You see?
Yeah.
Right.
That's the key.
Well, Dr. Wilhelm Reich, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, did it change your views on religion or spiritual aspects of your life?
I would say not really, because I've always been kind of I was a country boy. I grew up in the country, so I've always been close to nature. So I would say that I've always leaned toward nature more than man in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm.
in the way I feel about stuff. And I feel, you know, I've always believed in Jesus. I grew up in a family, religious family and everything. I think Jesus walked the earth a long time ago, probably tried to help man. You know how man is. They'd rather crucify him than do anything else. So that's pretty much it.
Right. Well, I was gonna say that theory that this guy Wilhelm Reich, who did some UFO work in the 50s out in Arizona and also up in Maine, his theory was that the nuclear energy excited what he called orgone energy in the atmosphere, or life energy, and that it disturbed it, just like if you throw, let's say, a rock into a pond, the ripples go out, and the ripples will go out quite a distance from where the rock falls in, and he felt it was the same thing with the nuclear material, that it caused a ripple effect and a ripple down into the universe, and it could be detected by alien beings quite a distance from the Earth. And that's how they knew we had developed nuclear weapons, because right after the first weapons were detonated in Japan, right in that late 40s, throughout the 50s, the number of sightings skyrocketed. And that seems to be consistent, Dudley, with what you're talking about.
I think that if you want to send a message to space, send off about 200 atomic bombs, and you send off a wonderful message.
Yeah, apparently, you know, and the bombs that were used in Japan, I understand, and I was never in the service, and I'm not a military guy, but from my reading, those bombs are quite small in comparison to what exists now and even in the later 50s.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, many, many times more powerful right now than they were then, and they were powerful enough to flatten two cities at that time. So,
I was just going to suppose that, you know, we have a lot of different species keeping an eye on us, whether they're actually on planet or not. But I think that, like you're saying, the nuclear activity would draw in even more, that it might reach that are further out or just more concerned. So I don't think that that's the only thing that has different species checking us out by any means. But I do think that, like you say, I mean, it's definitely a part of that.
Yeah. I'm most interested also in the spiritual impact of ufology and the effect it has on people's outlooks, as you are, Ruthann.
Yeah.
And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, it has to affect you somehow, because in a way, it changes our perceptions of reality. You know, suddenly everything we thought, well, it's like the time when they discovered, for a long time they thought that the Earth was the center of the universe, because everything seemed to revolve around the Earth.
Right.
And then this guy Copernicus came around and said, did some measurements or whatever he did, and he says, no, you got it wrong, we're going around the sun. And, you know, it changed people's whole conceptions, because they said, you mean we're not the center of everything that exists? That, like, blew people's egos, that really, like, you know,
yeah.
People didn't want to accept that, you know. I think this is similar to that.
I think so. I think that's why there's still some religions in some people who just refuse to believe that there's anything more. And, you know, we just heard recently about, what was it, 1 out of 4 Americans think that the sun revolves around the Earth. You know,
really?
Talk about being dumbed down. There was a thing out a while back, and a lot of people were talking about it because we were horrified. So, you know, science has come a long way, but not as far as we need to go.
That really shocks me.
Yeah,
I was shocked when they some surveyors went around the country and they read the people the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, without telling them where these rights were coming from or what document they were reading, and they found out a majority of the people had objections against them.
Well, you know, they have been trying to dumb us down for a long time, and in many cases it's been working.
Yeah, I mean, it's, well, you know, Things have been going on. There's no question in my mind. I know this guy, Peter Robbins, who I met at a conference many years ago, and I keep in touch with him from time to time. He's a very serious UFO researcher, lives up in Ithaca, and he wrote this book, Left at Eastgate. I don't know if you know about that book, Dudley, but it's a book that he wrote with this guy, Larry Warren. Eastgate, which no longer is a military installation, used to be a very big NATO U.S. military, U.S.-British military installation in the U.K., and there was a very famous sighting there one night, which really blew everybody's mind, and it seemed interdimensional because it was like a permeable craft. And the guy on duty that night, Larry Warren, he got called out, and he saw it. And he said the higher-ups in military intelligence in the U.K., they didn't seem surprised or shocked. In fact, they seemed to be interacting with it, and they seemed to know something about it, which they didn't particularly share with anybody else. And, it was very quiet that night, and it landed in Randlesham Forest. That sounds like something out of Robin Hood. And the animals in the area reacted to it before anybody. You know, dogs started barking, and you know, the animals knew something was there was something, you know, a very unusual happening in the atmosphere. But and I think it tripped off some type of radiation detector, and that was also a pretty big nuclear base. That's during the height of the Cold War. I think that was part of the NATO, one of the NATO nuclear bases in and around Europe at the time. And that was the equivalent to our Roswell, you know. And to this day, I mean, there's still a lot of controversy. But it's one of the best documented sightings that exists. And it sounds similar to what you're saying, Dudley, because, again, you have a nuclear base there. And the interesting thing is that it seems somehow interdimensional, and I forget the complete description. I have the book. I haven't read it in many years. But, you know, it seemed like a permeable craft. And the beings who came out of it seemed permeable. You know, like it wasn't something completely tangible. You know, like a piece of metal where you have a door that opens and closed. It seemed to be something a little bit, somewhat different than that.
Well, Larry Warren's a friend of mine on Facebook, and I talk to Larry on Facebook.
Oh, you know Larry Warren.
Yeah, and so Peter Robbins also. So Nick Pope, John Alexander, you can just go down the list. They're all my friends on Facebook. We all interact.
Oh, so you know about it.
Trade documents, files, reports, the whole nine yards.
Uh-huh. Well, what have they told you about it?
Well, the latest thing from the International UFO Conference in Phoenix back in February was John Alexander, who you can Google him, gave a big speech there, and he said UFOs are real and they're not going to go away. And John's pretty much the military guy in the UFO field, so, you know, if that's going to be the military viewpoint, UFOs are real, and they're not
right.
going away, then, you know, that's just one more little feather in your cap as far as disclosure goes there.
Well, since he's a military person, does he have the view that they're dangerous and we should be arming ourselves against them, or does he have some sense and realize that, you know, we should be working with other species?
He hasn't said one way or other. That I know for sure on that, but he is into national security, and if they're into national security, they're going to look at every angle of the situation.
Right.
Well, the first thing I asked Peter Robbins was, is this real? And he says, it's most definitely real. And he says, the government and the military has known about it for a very long time.
I think they're bringing out disclosure slowly but surely. The problem is the news media hasn't covered this in 40 or 50 years like they should have. So
they buried the whole thing.
They get caught not knowing much about it, really.
Well, the news media would have done a lot more reporting if they were free to, but they've been shut up. So, I mean, as bad as they are, we can't totally blame them for the lack of information.
Right, right. There's been a lot of threats made. Different things have happened down through time and all that.
Who's on, Nick? Do we have somebody else on?
Excuse me.
The three of us. I do want to say that if anybody wants to call in, our number is 718-664-6436. We do have people listening on the phone. But if you want to talk or make a comment, just press 1 and we'll answer you.
Yeah, you can get in by pressing 1. Well, there's a theory that a lot of disinformation has been released to try to cover over the whole thing, you know, through motion pictures and so on and so forth. They're trying to make a joke out of it, you know, and we know it's not a joke.
Right.
No, it's not a joke. It's definitely not a joke. It's very serious. If these beings are monitoring our nuclear weapons sites, I just had Blackwater contact me on LinkedIn about Afghanistan. They were guarding a weapons storage depot there, and there was a triangular UFO spotted hovering above the weapons storage area. And so I assume they had some sort of tactical nuclear weapons there that no one knows about. But anyway... And they were concerned about it. They contacted me, and I said, sounds like an alien to me. So
right.
It's serious. It's serious. You know.
And it's consistent. All of these things, these reports seem to all knit together.
Maybe we just need to get rid of nuclear weapons. Maybe that would help the situation.
Exactly. That fits in with one of the theories that I've seen several places where they say that, you know, as long as we keep up with the stupidity here on this planet, other species are not going to welcome us out into the greater universes. And I think that's another reason why they're just keeping an eye on the nuclear stuff. Because this is just showing primitive beings that want to destroy.
Well,
yeah, I think you'd want to make a good impression. If there were other beings around, you'd want to try to make a good impression on them, and that would be your first thing you'd try to do.
One would think.
The problem is it seems to be going in the other direction. We seem to be having nuclear proliferation, not nuclear disarmament and reduction. There was a reduction of the number of armaments in the old Soviet Union and in the U.S., but there's so many left, and then in the meantime, you have Pakistan and India, you have Israel, Iran is close to it, you have North Korea, and it's my belief, you know, there are other countries around the world that have it and just don't advertise it and nobody knows about it. I'm sure that, you know, we know that France has it in England, but you know what I'm talking about. I wouldn't surprise me that there are other countries in other parts of the world, in Africa and Latin America and who knows where, you know, that may, you know, be working on it or have it to some extent, you know, not a huge amount. But
right.
So I think that now in 1963 when President Kennedy proposed at first, you know, the nuclear test ban treaty. You know, there was hope way back then that, you know, eventually this could be done. But human nature being what it is, it seems to be going in the other direction.
I'd agree. That means more problems, because if there's other beings here and humans are wasting everything and trashing everything, that could be a problem.
Yeah.
Right. Why would they want to let us join, like, the greater whatever of the universes if we can't even, you know, behave right and take care of the small planet we're on now?
All right. I believe that.
That's sort of sad.
Well, that was the theme of the Day the Earth Stood Still, that that the space emissary said that they had constructed interplanetary robots who had the ability to destroy any planet that started to engage in warfare, and that they were programmed, and they were irreversibly mind you, this is in 1951. They made this movie, that they were irreversibly programmed. In other words, once they built them, they couldn't deconstruct it anymore. They sent them out, and they couldn't do anything about it. So they had to remain peaceful, otherwise they would be blown out of the universe.
Well, I think that the whole point of the whole movie is what we've been talking about, basically.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, we see what happened to him in the movie. We see that, you know, he was shot, and, of course, eventually he left.
Oh, yeah. The one guy that can save him, they shoot him.
Yeah, and they had he had the technology aboard the craft to revive him for a period of time, and, you know, he gave them that speech. He said, you know, if you don't get yourselves together, you're just going to be history, because we can't allow this.
That may be what it's all about. They've known about it since the 40s. Maybe they were told that, and they just can't tell the people, because if they do, then the people panic, because, you know, they can't handle what they got right now. How are they going to handle, you better do this and you better act right or else? You know, I just don't think they'd handle that very well.
I think they'd handle it fine. I give humans a lot of credit, much more credit than they're usually given, because when it comes to crisis situations and all, most of them behave quite well. I mean, you have your idiots and the fanatics out there. But
right,
so many...
you're right about under crisis situations, they do. I know what you're saying on that.
Mm-hmm. So I think that the idea of keeping things from us, the public, it's a crock of shit. It's all about control. They don't want us to know, because we would have...
It's all about control. You're right. All about control.
Yeah.
That is about control. And I think sometimes people, like politicians and military people, over-exaggerate these things. I mean, I can understand some fear of panic on some level. I remember reading about that Orson Welles had that famous Halloween telecast of H.G. Welles' War of the Worlds, you know, a Martian invasion.
I remember hearing
that. The Martian and I guess in those days, you know, it was radio, and they made an announcement before the show, but they must have only made one announcement. People tuned in late. They felt there was an actual invasion going on, and there was panic. People actually loaded up their cars, and they got on the highways, and, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that was an aberration. I don't think that, I think
so,
if it had been explained, that it would have been all right.
Right, and people, this was decades and decades ago, and in certain ways, people weren't as sophisticated. I mean, now we have all this technology, and... If you hear that, you know, you tune into some radio station, you hear that, you're going to damn sure check out the web. And different, you know, it's a totally different thing, I think, now. Many people were thrilled when that high-ranking person in Canada recently, you know, came out. He was the highest government official ever to actually come out and say, yes, you know, we're dealing with different
Paul
species.
Hillier.
So,
yeah, I remember reading about that guy, yes.
They were thrilled about that. I didn't run into anybody who was saying, that guy's a liar. He's just trying to panic us. All the people I know
that... I think he's trying to find out. I think he's one of the leaders of trying to find out what's really going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Well,
I think it's great that
Nick Pope also was in the UK government, wasn't he?
Nick Pope was in the Ministry of Defense
right.
for about 15 years, and his dad was a big-time Ministry of Defense, and he actually worked the UFO department. So
there you're getting it from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
They should know. Nick Pope pretty much represents the British Ministry of Defense, and John Alexander pretty much represents American military side. So when those two guys get together and they get on the same page and they start saying, yeah, UFOs are real and they're not
right.
going away, then everybody better get ready and do a little educating is all I got to say. You know.
Yeah.
Do a little agitating. What are you talking about?
Educating. Educate the American people that this
is
real.
Okay. No, Dudley, I thought you said agitating and I was going...
No, I'm sorry. No, educate. Educate.
Definitely. I totally agree.
Because, I mean, if people start seeing flying saucers on a regular basis, they're going to want to call up somebody and find out what's going on. And right now there's very few people you can call and find out anything.
Yeah, yeah. Because people usually end up calling the news media, and they don't know anything about it either. So
they don't want to talk to you, the regular news media.
Right, right. So you have the blind leading the blinders or something. It's just not.
Well, they say that like five people control all the news media or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just gotten worse over time.
That.
There's just a few people now. You got Fox. You know, you got MSNBC. There's just a few big corporations involved. Where there used to be more. I think
just
cable
like
has caused the consolidation, not a...
Well, and this goes for newspapers and everything. I mean, the print news, it's the same people, the same corporations are controlling that. And that used to be something that, you know, every little town in America had their own newspaper. And
right.
there might be somebody who owned the newspaper in this town and the little town 8 miles away, okay? But now... these all belong to some syndicate. And, you know, even your little local, about the only thing that might not be owned by them would be your free giveaway, throwaway papers.
Right.
Some of those are privately, independently published. But all these others are connected. So you're going to get a certain bit of information. And
right.
not nearly anything like the real news.
No, and now with the migration to online, the old print media that we grew up with, the old newsprint media, that's all closing down.
Right.
And I think it's going to make the situation even worse. I mean, as far as the media with a national reach, I think the alternative media like... what we have, you know, on the internet and all that, that's fine. And I guess it'll just have to be kind of a network of smaller media getting the word out on different things.
Exactly. And then instead of being in competition, we need to advertise for each other. And, you know, come up with different organizations. Like we've got the Commons Project Network on Facebook and online as a site. And there's a lot of different radio stations and shows and bloggers and things like that are connected to this because we're just trying to get the word out. And so, you know, we'll advertise for each other. And we're not in this competition. Of course, there's some people that are trying to compete, but most of us are just trying to wake up people. Like Doug said, education. So however we can do that, that's what we're after. We're not looking to get rich.
We need to think about this alien thing. and this UFO thing, because they're important issues, probably the most important issues in the history of man, dating back to the time of Christ, you know, and even way back then, there's people that believe this goes all the way back to the beginning of time almost.
Right.
The beginning of the time on this planet, like they say, maybe 400,000 years ago or something. I mean, the beginning that we can actually go back to. But there's always been people from off planet or entities somehow from off planet. You talk about the Christian religion, Dudley, and in the Bible, I mean, of course, it's not very old, but in the Old Testament, there were stories that people, they'll go to Ezekiel and talk about a UFO being described, a wheel and a wheel and on and on. So
I believe the Bible's full of those stories.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you read it with that in mind, if you don't put that out of your mind, it's like, wow, you know, here's written history.
Yeah. Well, you can also find it in the Hindu religion. Lots of alien stuff way back in Hindu, before Buddha, clear back in Jainism, way back there where they had deities supposedly that were half alien, half human.
Yeah, well, and you look on, you know, a lot of the old, I'll just say cave walls, but you know what I'm saying, whether it was hieroglyphics or paintings on pieces of pottery or the walls or whatever, there's been combinations. I mean, this would be like an artist's depiction of something. And we talked before, Steve and I, about the paintings or the etchings of the almost stick men that look like what we would consider like the astronauts from the 50s or 60s with the big bubble thing on the head and everything. It's like
Native,
you know,
American paintings.
Exactly. They've seen things way back.
Oh, yeah. Native Americans, I think the Cherokee tribe actually believes they are descended from space.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that, you know what? That hits home with me because I'm part Cherokee, and it's like, yeah,
well,
okay.
Well, you might have a special connection there.
Yeah. But, we have depended on beings from space, I think, for such a long time and to help us. And, of course, because we didn't understand as a people during certain times of human history, so we made them into gods. And, you know, when we look back now, I mean, that just makes sense.
Plus, you're not supposed to talk about it either. I think the Pope burned a lot of people at the stake.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, in the Middle Ages, I mean, like Giordano Bruno got a hot foot on that one, you know, because he was claiming that first of all, he said the universe was infinite and there were many, many living beings out there. And that was one of the things that got him in trouble with the Inquisition, which was not too much of an open-minded punch, to say the least.
Yeah, you paid for it big time back then.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that wasn't just you weren't just ostracized. You were barbecued.
Right.
But,
so now where people aren't being burned at the stake or drowned necessarily for their views, but they are, people can still lose jobs and different things if they're too vocal on whether it's politics or religion or space beings. You know, the employers can find some way to get rid of them.
I think, generally speaking, though, outside of the workplace, people are more open than they were back in the 50s and 40s.
Yeah.
I think they're more open about it now because of all the publicity, the movies, the books, and everything else. But, you know, that was, you know, you still have to be careful not to overdo it because, you know, people start looking at you like, you know, you're spaced out, and, you know.
Well, it's for me, personally, it's been quite a journey, because a few months ago, I was talking to some relatives, and I had just always thought that they would be pretty conservative in their views about all of this.
Right.
And my God, they weren't. I mean, they're quite at home with the whole idea of different beings on different worlds visiting,
right,
and us visiting. And then we were talking about, like you were talking about the paintings, Native American paintings, like the Thunderbird, and, you know, then on into Sasquatch, Yeti, the snowman, whatever you want to call them. And, I mean, just all of these different things. I was amazed. And that was when I thought, okay, you know, don't just assume that because you don't know, don't assume that they're not with you on these things, because they amazed me. It was a very pleasant surprise.
I agree 100%. I was talking to my mother, who's 82, and, you know, I told her that I've been doing a UFO investigation for about 5 years now, and I thought she would have something to say about that, but she said no, one of her doctors, Indian doctors, had told her when she brought the subject up with him during a doctor's visit that, yeah, he had seen a UFO in India.
Wow.
And, so, and your mother,
after
your mother,
her doctor told her that, that pretty much sealed the deal there, you know.
Wow. But,
what's
impressive to me is that your mother brought it up to the doctor, so she'd been thinking about it.
Right, yeah, she watches Ancient Aliens.
Okay.
The History Channel.
Yeah.
Is
and
that
she really likes it. She, you know. But,
okay. Wow. So, but see, now that's a good point, though. Sometimes I think people in the United States think that, you know, we're the only ones that see them. But this is not true at all.
No, it's a worldwide phenomena.
Yeah.
Every country, everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
I think it's just exciting myself. I mean, I'm...
Well, they haven't killed us yet. So we must be doing something right.
They're not going to kill us. No. And in my opinion, they're not going to let us kill us either.
Yeah, that's what the nuclear issue could be about. They could, you know.
Yeah, I think
well,
that they're going
to. There's a big divergence of opinion among people in the UFO field. You know, as to how many are friendly and how many might be hostile. You do have people out there who are, you know, believe that, you know, you do have hostile UFOs. I'm not saying they're trying to destroy everybody, but that that have, you know, are not necessarily friendly. They may be indifferent or, you know. And then, of course, there's
I understand what you're saying. You know, and I think probably the way it is, it's probably like life. You've got good and bad.
Right.
Everywhere you go and everything you do, there's good and bad. Well, you can't have one without the other almost, you know. So.
Right, right.
Well,
I mean,
and,
I don't think anyone knows, but, I mean, you know, there's various different theories. I know Brad Steiger, I mentioned him before, he used to churn out these books on UFOs and all kinds of stuff year after year. He had one book in particular in which, you know, he had sightings which he categorized as hostile sightings or hostile interactions. But there have been many more interactions that were, I would characterize them as neutral, you know. They're not out to hurt anybody.
Could be, and there could be great positive ones, too. I mean...
If you knew
all the secrets and everything that's happened in time, then you'd know. But when you're investigating, you just got to open every door and turn over every rock and just keep searching is what you have to do.
Yeah, I mean, there have been, you know, there have been accounts of people who have been healed by UFOs or, you know, I mean, like by being in the vicinity of UFOs, there are people who claim that they had, that they were healed. Others... you know,
well, Travis Walton, I really believe was abducted by some aliens, and he was released by those aliens, and he's had no bad repercussions that I know of since then. So, and now he believes that they actually helped him. So you got to keep an open mind on the whole thing, and you know, that's the main thing you have to do.
I
probably
would think
a mixed bag. I mean, I'm not saying they're hostile. I mean, the hope would be that you have some advanced civilizations out there that would take an interest in helping us solve our problems. But now we don't know whether they have been trying to, but the information hasn't reached us because, you know, they're dealing with the authorities, you know.
Right.
I mean, you know, just like this guy in the Day of the Earth that still... he wanted to speak to a collection of the leaders of the earth, you know, and at that time the Secretary of State told him that in the U.S. that, you know, it'd be impossible because a lot of leaders won't even sit down at the same table together, and he said the U.N. didn't represent all the nations of the earth. And
all the nations of the earth deserve to know the truth is what I think.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it, but, you know, with all the propaganda wars going on and all the military conflicts, it's extremely hard to get at the truth. You really have to read a lot of different sources, you know, to try to find out what's really going on. Just look at the situation in the Ukraine. I mean, I watch Russian TV. I get a completely different picture from what I'm getting on Fox News. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you do. So, if you watch the Russian stuff, you're going to get their side of the story.
Well, you want to get their side because God knows you're not getting the truth from Fox News.
Or anything, and just any, you know, supposedly neutral, even public radio, any kind of a neutral thing. I mean, you know, it's just the phraseology, what they use, you know. They say Russian insurgents. There's not Russian insurgents. You know, if there are Russian people living in the eastern Ukraine, you wouldn't characterize them like alien forces from Russia that came into the Ukraine and are like. You know, and then you have the government in the Kiev, which was never elected, I don't believe, the leadership, and, you know, they're arguing because people actually voted for what they wanted in the Crimea. So, I mean, but, you know, it gets all twisted around, and, you know, then on the West they're saying, oh, that wasn't a free election because the Russians were there, and, you know, so, you know, well, you know, it's military propaganda.
Sure. But that's why you want to talk to people in these countries, and we can because they're online. They are. I mean, not the very, very poorest. In some countries, they aren't online, but you can talk to the people and find out what's really happening.
Well, I mean, they can get information.
They don't have investigating reporters hardly anymore, I don't think. In the old days, back in the 60s and early 70s, they had reporters out in the field in Vietnam. Yeah. Going blow by blow with what was going on over there.
They don't allow that anymore.
Now they pull these people out. You don't have any idea what's going on. The official.
No, they don't allow it. I remember in the 60s that the news people and the media and the journalists, they were permitted to go anywhere they wanted to, and they interviewed the Viet Cong. They interviewed, you know. Now the journalists have to be embedded if they want to go into the field. Otherwise, they have to stay inside the Pentagon compounds, you know, the military compounds, and they get briefings, you know.
Right.
So they don't know what's
embedded,
going on.
If they're embedded, they damn straight better toe the party line.
I mean, how do you know what's going on if you get a briefing from, you're just getting a briefing inside a hangar someplace? They're
going
to tell you, the Army is going to tell you what's most favorable to them, obviously.
Sure.
You know.
That's the same thing, even if you're out in the field, because you've been embedded a company, you're supposed to, you know, toot their horns,
and that's how they do this UFO censorship, same way. They don't let anybody know anything. They have to sign confidentiality agreements that you will not disclose and everything else.
Yeah.
Well, the way around that is, you know, to simply write down everything and you know, publish it yourself and get it out through blogs and other things. And, you know, there is a First Amendment. There's nothing you can do. You haven't signed it. Unless you're a member of the military and you've signed an agreement that any, you know, you're an intelligence guy or some other person that, you know, or you're a member of the CIA and, you know, you're not supposed to say anything about any information that comes to you. If you're an ordinary citizen, I mean, you're free to disseminate whatever information you want to, you know.
That's the way I feel about it, and that's why I'm on Facebook, and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's what I do. I don't worry about it. They say,
yeah.
Well, don't you know that all this stuff is monitored? I said, look, I'm a free person, you know, and we're protected by the Constitution. We can do this, you know. We have a right to do this.
When they throw the Constitution out the window and say it no longer counts, it's canceled, then that's when it's canceled. Until then, I'm going by it.
Me too. It's still in effect, and, you know,
Dudley, do you have a radio show or radio station, or am I mistaken?
No, I don't. I just do my own investigation.
Okay.
And I'm based out of Houston here. You can Google me, find me on LinkedIn or Facebook. Those
okay.
are my locations to contact.
All right. We would be very happy if you came back.
Your
if
last
you
name?
Have anything specific you want to talk about, then
we'll
advertise it ahead
I've
of
just
time.
Got all kinds of stuff, but, you know,
I'm trying
the
to
way...
Get Dudley, I'm trying to get your last name.
Dudley, D-U-D-L-E-Y.
I'm sorry, what's your first name?
Kenneth, just put Kenneth, K-E-N-N-E-T-H, Dudley, D-U-D-L-E-Y, and then UFO, and hit enter.
Yeah. Oh, okay. No, I
okay.
I'm sorry. I'm about your last name.
That's how you find me, okay?
I don't make a habit of calling people by their last name, so I'm sorry. I thought that was your first name. Okay.
Of course, I'm on Facebook. If you want to come be my friend on Facebook, I'd be more
definitely.
Happy to.
Definitely.
Okay, you know, very good.
Share my posts with you.
All right, excellent.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, we've got about 1 minute left, so anybody want to wind this one up?
Well, like I said, you know, I'd like to thank you, Dudley, for coming on, and I hope you come back. And we'll try to, you know, think of a topic and advertise it ahead of time, or at least publicize it. And, you know, thank you, Ruth Ann, for your continuing help. Without you, it wouldn't be possible.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And Mr. Kenneth Dudley on Facebook and LinkedIn, thank you for joining us.
Thank you,
Mr. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye. Have a good weekend.
See you next
bye-bye.
Thursday.
Guys and gals, thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
You there?
You're listening to Aramarte Feo on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hi, this is your host for Five Rivers Radio Hour, Michael Gorman, and I just wanted to say a few words about the interview that's coming up. We're about to run an interview that was pre-recorded. I'm really excited about it. The interview is with a man named Davi Kopanawa, who is the shaman of the Yanomami tribe in the Amazon rainforest in Brazil. They have been in contact with the Western world only for a few decades. Davi has taken it upon himself, because of the pain that they've experienced since contacting the white folks, to be an advocate internationally for the indigenous people and for the rainforest. He's an amazing guy. He just wrote a book that he's been on tour for. We did the interview at the offices of Survival International, which is an amazing group that advocates for the tribal peoples and for the rainforest. So if you want to Google them, it's an amazing organization. I've gotten a real passion about this subject because of the issues that they're dealing with. The Yanomami are dealing with gold miners coming into the area, trees being chopped down, diseases that we've brought in that they've never been exposed to. It's like California gold rush all over again, similar to what the tribes in Africa are going through, the Maasai. When just a little heads up about the interview, Davi speaks the language of his people, and he speaks Portuguese, which is the language of Brazil. We did the interview through a translator, so it'll take a little bit more effort to listen to this one. You'll hear my voice, you'll hear the translation of that to Davi, and then Davi's answer in Portuguese, and then the translation back to us. So it'll take a little bit of extra effort to follow along with this interview, but trust me, you'll be really glad that you did.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Michael. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, you're welcome. It was definitely a privilege, and roll the tape.
All right.
Okay, welcome to Five Rivers Radio Hour. We have an amazing guest right now that I'm really excited to talk to. His name is Davi Kopanawa Yanomami, and he's a shaman from the Yanomami people down in Brazil who are struggling to keep their land in the rainforest and keep it safe and keep their indigenous ways safe. So it's a subject near and dear to my heart. And so welcome, Davi. Thank you for being here.
Seja bem-vindo, Davi. Muito obrigado por estar com a gente. Ele trabalha para o Estação de Rádio 5 Rio. Ele falou que você é xamã, pajé, Yanomami, e que você e o povo Yanomami estão lutando para salvar a floresta.
And did you read them the first thing that I had written on there?
Yes.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you, Davi. I mean, for being here, for letting us talk to you, and for the work you're doing. I think it's some of the most important work on the planet right now.
Obrigado muito, Davi, por estar aqui. Obrigado também para seu trabalho para salvar a planeta. Eu acho que é um dos trabalhos mais importantes na nossa planeta, é o seu trabalho de lutar para a floresta.
I'm really interested in asking about your spirituality, your religion. If you're comfortable with talking about that, I'd like to focus on that, if that's okay.
Se você permitiria, ele gostaria muito de conversar um pouco contigo sobre a questão de espiritualidade do povo Yanomami.
Mm-hmm. Good. In Berkeley 2 days ago, you made a comment when we were talking about how difficult it was to find the words in the language to talk about some of the things that you want to talk to white people about. And what I'm wondering is, do you think that the reason there aren't words to talk about it is because so many of us have lost our connection to our indigenous ways, so we don't have the ideas in our culture and therefore don't have the words to talk about it? Would you say that that would be a fair explanation of that?
Então, no outro dia, na Universidade de Berkeley, quando você estava a palestra, você comentou que às vezes é difícil achar as palavras para explicar seu pensamento e sua filosofia. E às vezes você acha que os natos, os brancos, as línguas dos brancos, os povos brancos, eles não têm palavras para explicar questões de espiritualidade.
Uhum.
Talvez porque eles mesmos, eles perderam o pensamento xamânico, o pensamento de natureza na cultura do branco. Talvez por isso é difícil achar a palavra certa,
uhum.
porque o próprio branco perdeu também.
Certo. How do you work with that? How do you overcome that when you talk to people?
Então, quando você, a pergunta é, quando você fala com os brancos, como que você consegue transmitir os seus sentimentos, dado que não existem muitas dessas palavras na língua dos brancos para expressar o seu pensamento?
Uhum.
Maria, está perguntando
sim,
tá,
de mim? Sim, a pergunta é isso.
Uhum.
É difícil achar as palavras, porque não existem na língua dos brancos. Porque eles podem uhum. já... Está perguntando, será que eles perderam a conexão com a natureza, com o planeta?
Uhum.
Porque eles não têm as palavras na língua portuguesa ou inglesa.
Bom, eu acredito que cada povo da terra tem a própria língua diferente, que fala diferente. Eu acho que um parque eles perderam. E o pai, o mãe, não continue falar a própria sua idioma. É por isso que eles deixam para trás. Esqueceu. Quando o homem da cidade, que virou artista, que virou professor, criar a escola, está perto da cidade. E o homem da cidade, ele construiu a escola pública, para as crianças estudar esse pensamento diferente da cidade. E um professor que ele deu, que dá aula, mas ele não fala sobre a floresta, sobre a terra, sobre costume, como ele costuma que nasceu, porque eles nasceram, ele tinha próprio xamã dele, que usava antigamente. Então, por causa da escola pública que tentaram construir, depois tentaram fazer universidade que eles ensinam outras coisas, os políticos públicos. Então, a universidade acabaram com o próprio conhecimento deles. É por isso que para nós, quando o mundo fala com o homem branco, é difícil para traduzir. Para nós, indígena não tem uma palavra que eles falam, como xabê, xamã, e baldé, tem três palavras que um homem branco brasileiro usa. Tá? Aqui no Estados Unidos, que usa palavras diferentes de xabiri. Xabiri, um xamã, um curandeira. É por isso que é difícil eu transmitir para ele, para explicar, né? Explicar para entender melhor. E pensando por as dois, em goiano humano e português, para repassar, para eles entenderem melhor, para mim é pouco difícil, porque eu não conheço as letras.
Talk as much as I do.
So I think each people on the earth has a different language and they speak differently. And I think here people have lost a part of this language. The parents don't continue to speak in their own language to their children, and so for this reason things have been forgotten. And for example, here the city people, they may become artists and teachers. They've created schools in the city, and these public schools are where their children study. And it's a different way. A teacher gives lessons, but they don't talk about the forest and the earth and the customs which have been born from the earth. In the old times, you had shamans here. But the public schools here have been invented by your people and built, and then you invented the university, and you teach other things, and universities have finished off your thoughts. So when indigenous people speak to the white people, it's very difficult to translate things. For example, to translate Shafiri or Shaman, or page, which is the Brazilian word. These are all three words that in the Portuguese language in Brazil refer to a shaman. But here in the US, for example, you might use different words. You might talk about healers, curanderos,
healers. Right.
So it's very difficult for me to explain to people so that they understand better. And of course, I'm talking, translating from the Yanomami language into Portuguese, and then it's translated into English. So this is all a bit difficult. And also, I don't know a lot about writing itself. I don't write.
One of the things, I actually bought a gift today. It's a book that I've written, but I've been doing research on the original tribal European people, the Celts, and they believe much as the Yanomami do. Trees were sacred, the forest was sacred, earth, air, fire, and water. They took care of everybody in the tribe. When Rome, which which is the source of our current culture, fought them. They burned all their books and tried to wipe them off the planet and out of history. So white people have forgotten they even have those ancestors. And what I'd like to know from Donnie is, if he thinks if white people could reconnect to their tribal ancestors, that maybe the communication would be easier, maybe there would be a greater understanding between the way the Yanomami see the forest and the way white people do. Just wondering if he thinks that might be one of the avenues for educating white people.
Então, ele está pesquisando um povo original da Europa que se chama Celt. Então, era um povo de muitos anos atrás. E eles, aquele povo da Europa, o povo tribal, indígena da Europa, eles acharam, como vocês, que a terra sagrada, a floresta sagrada, as árvores, eles acreditavam na força de terra, fogo e água. Eles cuidavam, mas só que houvendo invasão de gente romana, se chama, e mataram, acabaram com aquele povo. Então, ele acha que os Napa, eles esqueceram dos ancestrais deles. Então, você acha que é possível o povo branco ter conexão de novo com os ancestrais para entender melhor a floresta? Seria, a pergunta é, você acha que é possível os brancos hoje em dia de lembrar dos ancestrais para poder entender melhor
questões
de
preservação da floresta? É muito difícil para relembrar de novo. Porque eu estou falando isso, é muito difícil para retornar, lembrar. E é tipo, antigamente que eles tinham o pajé. O pajé que conhecia e guardar a histórico. Todo povo indígena do mundo inteiro, da Europa, no Brasil, África, e nós nascemos, vivemos numa floresta longe da cidade. Guardamos a nossa sabedoria, porque Bagé é quartiano da história. E Brunapa, os americanos, escolheu para a igreja. Escolher para a igreja para esquecer o próprio, próprio conhecimento tradicional dele. Então, hoje em dia, os brancos estão arrependidos e a beleza que eles perderam. Eles estão me perguntando, para mim, para recuperar e imitar que vão que eles perderam. Eu acho que é muito difícil, porque os políticos, grandes políticos, eles têm, têm um papel que chama Constituição, Constituição Federal, de homem, um governo que fez, junto com os senadores, com os deputados, e os chefes do exército, que fizeram uma lei muito diferente, assim, um capitalista, né? Capitalista é um capital. Então, para relembrar a história que nasceu junto com ele, é muito difícil para ele para recuperar. Mas é um professor que gosta de a natureza, professor, professora, continua falando, explicando ao aluno novo, meninos, meninas. Esse pessoal novo, eu acho que ele vai, assim, começar a conhecer a floresta, conhecer as montanhas, conhecer as árvores, conhecer os karatê correndo e conhecer onde não está destruída. Eu acredito que ele só vai aprender a defender. Tá? Eu não acredito que ele vai formar a própria língua dele, não. Porque o lei grande, eles proibiram falar a própria língua dele.
So it's very difficult to remember things again from the past. It's very difficult indeed to return, to go back and to remember old ways and customs. In former times, in many, many years, a long, long time ago, the white people had shamans and they knew about things and they kept the history and the stories in their heads. So all indigenous peoples throughout the whole world, whether from Europe or Africa or Brazil, we were born and we lived in the forest very far from the city. We kept our knowledge because our shamans are the guardians of our history. So here, for example, the Napa, the white people, the American people, you chose the church and so you forgot your own traditional knowledge. So today, white people are regretting this. They see the beauty that they lost. You asked me about whether this can be recuperated, but I think it will only be people imitating what they lost. I think it's very difficult because big politicians here have a role to play. You have a thing called the Federal Constitution, which is a paper written up by the government, made by senators and deputies and the head of the army. You've made all these laws, and this is all very different. It's a capitalist system. You've created capital. So for people to get back, if you like, the history, the stories of the past, this is very difficult. A teacher, any teacher who likes and lives with nature, will continue to speak and explain to the young people. And I think that these young people they'll begin to have some knowledge and understand about the forest, the mountains, trees, and the flowing rivers in places where they have not been destroyed. And I also think the young people will learn how to defend nature. But in terms of recuperating languages, thinking of the indigenous people in this country, this is very difficult because their languages were prohibited. They were forbidden to speak their own languages.
Yeah, I understand that. The Celts also were treated that way. Kids were taken out of their families. They were forbidden to speak Gaelic. But fortunately, there's a revival of that going on. There were enough people that still spoke it. And in studying it, things like in Gaelic, you don't say, I am angry. You say, I have anger on me. So it's not, doesn't define you. So there's a really wonderful reflection of it, but it's still very small in Western culture.
Celta, que mesmo que morreram muito, há pouco da língua sobreviveu e eles estão recuperando hoje em dia a língua dos celtas que vem do meu país.
I love it. In Ireland, they're starting to take away the English street signs and just have the Gaelic ones up. By the way, I just to throw out there that the shamans of the Celtic people were called druids. And the word itself means wise one of the oak tree. Speaking of the trees, in your spiritual tradition, are the Yanomami people animist believe that everything has spirit. White people have been taught that only people have spirit.
A pergunta é, você que é um homem e você como pajé, você acha que tudo tem espírito? Porque os Napa, eles foram ensinados que só as pessoas têm espírito. Mas você, você é um homem, vocês acham que tem espírito em muitas coisas, né? Além de ser humano?
Então, nós somos criados por um homem que chama Oman. Todo o povo indígena, no mundo geral, está espalhado, como o mano colocou, longe do outro, outra terra. Eu sou pajé. O meu sogro, Dorival Míssimo, ensinou o Chapiri. Saber cada lugar da terra, saber mora. Você chama espírito, eu não gosto de chamar espírito não. A espírito da terra, ele fica junto com terra, terra não está sozinha, tá? A terra não está sozinha. A floresta também não está sozinha. O rio também, ele não está sozinho. E o sol, você chama sol, motoca. Motoca também, ele não está sozinho. E a lua também, ele não está sozinho. E nós, Yanomami, estudamos também para não esquecer os saberes. Saber é muito importante para todos da Terra. Mas outros povos, outras partes, perderam. E nós, que mora longe, lugar longe, as montanhas, esses índios que estão lá na aldeia, os índios da aldeia, os índios da floresta, eles que guardaram saber para ele, para não ficar sem nada. Para ele não ficar sem nada, então eles guardaram o saber, o espírito da terra, o espírito da floresta, o espírito da montanha, para tudo que nós vemos hoje. Eu acredito. Cada terra tem a Uri Anu Utubu, Machida Anu Utubu, que Utubu é uma mage, uma mágica, né? Uma mage que ele está junto com terra, com floresta. Mas nós, assim, povo da cidade, ele não recebe, não enxerga, mas ele enxergar a alma da terra, a alma da floresta, ele enxerga nós. Ele se olhar de nós, respeitar e cuidar nossas crianças, cuidar nossas filhas. É assim que nós, Yanomami, sabemos, aprendemos enxergar, aprendemos a acreditar cada país que nós ouvimos e está sempre guardando, sempre cuidando o costume dele. Desde o começo do mundo, o começo da terra, quando a terra era rapazinho, era nova. Então, aí os indígenas, quando os indígenas estavam começando a crescer, e o conhecimento deles, o conhecimento tradicional deles, foi guardado com a grande homem do pajé. Grande homem é um quartião da sabedoria da nossa terra-planeta. Do Chapiri.
So we were created by Umama, who's the creator. Every indigenous people in the world spread out, and that's because Umama put them there, far away in different places. I'm a shaman, and Lori Val, my father-in-law, taught me, and he showed me the Shapini, the shamanic spirit. Every place on earth has Shapini, shamanic spirit, who live there. I don't like to use that word, spirit. It's not the word that I use. But the earth is not alone, the forest is not alone, the rivers are not alone. The sun, which we call Nefokama, is not alone. The moon is not alone. We Yanomami study so we don't forget the shamanic spirit. And the shamanic spirits are very important for all of us who live on the earth. Other people have lost those spirits, but we who live far away in the mountains, we the indigenous people, in our community, people of the forest, we keep the shamanic spirit for everybody, so they're not left, as it were. we teach them, we look after them, and the shamanic spirits of the earth, of the forest, of the mountains, everything out there, we look after. And each land has Udihi Tupu, which is like an it's like an image, their image spirit, their images of what exists. So you have images of the earth and the forest and different things. That's how we refer to them. The Sinti people don't see these image spirits or receive them. And so we, the soul of the forest, comes to us, speaks to us, and we watch and we listen and we look after our children and our lives this way. We are shamans, so we see and we believe. Indigenous people in every country have kept up these customs, this way of being, since the beginning of the world, since the beginning of Earth, when the Earth was young, like a small child. And indigenous people have grown up with the Earth's traditional knowledge, and this is because this traditional knowledge has been conserved or kept by the great shamans who are the guardians of the planet Earth.
That's beautiful. I ran across the word, and I don't know quite how it's Zapiri?
Yes, Zapiri.
Zapiri. Those are the shamanic spirits. In the Celtic tradition, there are similar spirits we call the fairies. They take care of the land. They are intermediaries between people and the spirit realm. And I was wondering if they were similar to that in there. But it sounds as if they definitely are.
Está falando na tradição do povo antigo, os celtas que moravam na Europa muito tempo atrás. Eles tiveram um tipo de espírito, né, que se chamou de fairy. Aqueles espíritos sempre olhava para a gente, né? Para cuidar ele, sempre vigiando. Então, ele está perguntando, você acha que os chacarins são mais ou menos parecidos com aquele espírito dos tempos antigos que vigiava, que cuidava da gente?
Uhum.
Você acha que é uma coisa?
Não, esse é espírito que ele está falando. Uhum. Ele escutou falar outro indígena antigo. Esse não chama alma, né? Não chama alma. Chama nós. Yanomami chama Uri Anu Utupa. Mashida Anu Utupa. E os antigos, eles olhavam, falavam com ele, pedia para ele proteger. Aquele não mudou nada. Aqueles estão vivos. Tá. Eles estão vivos. O espírito está antigo. Como quando a terra surgiu, se criou, então ele criou junto com a terra, essa Xabiri. Xabiri antigo até hoje existe em cada lugar. Eu vou tentar explicar cada lugar, essa Xabiri que ele veio falar existe. Lá na minha terra, nas montanhas, Xabiri está lá, mas hoje em dia ele não se mostra. Tá? Antigamente ele se mostrava para a pessoa olhar ele, mas hoje em dia esconderam para não se contaminar ele. E nós, Yanomami, acreditamos que ele está junto com nós. É por isso que a terra está verde. Porque esse alma antigo está vivo, junto com ele, andando, cuidando, mostrando para nossas crianças e os pais também continuam falando com ele e para ele não deixar nós sozinhos. Ele fica sempre no lado, como se pai, como se mãe. Isso aí é muito importante para nós tudo. Tá? Hoje, aqui na cidade de Califórnia, o povo da cidade, ele não se lembra mais, não conhece que nos, o povo ancestral?
Sim.
Povo ancestral. E espírito antigo que existe até no mar. No mar tem gente, tem mais da água, tem mais do rio, mas nós, hoje, o povo de Califórnia, ele não acredita que existe uma alma que existe alma do rio. Tá? Porque eles perderam o pensamento deles por causa da cidade, de carro, de avião, da escola, de luz, tudo que existe, tudo que o pessoal aprendeu, aprendendo tecnologia, que homens inventaram para eles, o povo esquecer o que tem na terra, na terra,
Well, this fairy spirit that you talk about, we the Anomami people, what we would call it is Unikinukupa, which is like this image spirit. The old people spoke to them and asked them to protect us. And these spirits are still alive. So when the earth was born and created, the Shatterim, the shamanic spirits, were there with the earth. And these very old shamanic spirits are in every place, like your prairies are. The Shatterim are in the mountains. But the thing is, they don't show themselves. In the old days, they did show themselves. But today, they don't, because they don't want to be contaminated. So we, Anomami, believe that they are there with us. And that is why the earth is green, because they are looking after it, and they're trying to show this to our children. And the shamanic spirits talk to our children, not so that we're not alone, as it were, we're always with them. They're all by our side, these shamanic spirits. They're like parents to us. So today in the cities here in California, the city people don't remember the ancestral spirits, the old spirits which existed. And for example, these spirits exist in the sea, the mother of water, of the rivers. But today in California, people don't believe that the soul of the river exists, because the young people sort of lost this thought because of the city, because of the aeroplanes, the cars, electricity, schools. They learn about technology. People invented technology so that they would forget what is in the earth.
Yeah. That was beautifully put. For white people, life is like always like the beginning here, and then you go your journey, and then it ends. In talking to some of the Native American tribes here in America, and as well as the Celts, they... It's a circle, a spiral, without just beginning and end.
We are children of Oman.
We call her, in the Celtic tradition, we call her Danu.
Cada língua, cada língua indígena, mundo geral, é só.
So in every indigenous language in the world,
nome geral é Rutukara.
So the general name is Rutukara.
Spell that for me.
And it's one.
Eu sempre falo é um único mundo.
I always say there is only one world.
Ele não tem outro irmão.
This world has no brother.
Que acaba aqui para ele ficar no lugar dele. Não tem.
And so you can't say it will finish and then there'll be another world. This is just one world.
This world, yeah.
Não é só que os brancos não acreditam.
But the white people don't believe this.
Yeah.
Eles só acreditam em Deus.
They only believe in God.
There's some of us who do.
Tem alguns brancos que não acreditam, eles acreditam em isso que você está explicando.
Então, esse aqui chama Rutukara Associação Yanomami.
So we call this Rutukara Yanomami Association. That's the name of the organization that Gavi created.
That's wonderful. Danu, for me, is in my heart.
Nós todos, nós, branco, chama Nápoles, branco, negro, indígena, a floresta, o mar, o sol, a lua, a estrela, a saúde. Nós estamos no um. Nós estamos no... Nós, todos, nós estamos dentro disso aqui.
So, all of us, the Napa, the white people, the black people, the indigenous people, the forest, the sea, the sun, the moon, the stars, our health, our well-being, everything is inside this self.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome. It fits very well with my research I've been doing on my own tribal ancestors, and it's good to hear that connection is.
Yeah. Então,
é bom, esse aqui, ele não tem final para morrer. Esse aí é para sempre.
This fear lasts ever. It's such an emotion.
Yes.
It will never end. Yes. It won't go.
Agora a floresta vai acabar.
The forest will die.
A floresta vai acabar. Os carapés, vai secar.
The streams will dry up.
A terra vai destruída.
The earth will be destroyed.
E nós vamos morrer. And os indígenas.
We, the indigenous people, will die.
Essa aqui não, essa vai...
circular spherical will continue forever.
I had somebody once ask me what the Celtic view of beginnings, like what's the creation story among the Celts, and they don't really have much of one, because what they would do is say, well, you know, just pick any point in the circle and something is beginning and something is ending, something's been created and something's dying. So there's not just like one beginning way back in the past.
Na tradição dos celtas é assim também, que tem começo e fim, mas sempre é assim, não é assim.
Então chama O.
O. O.
O Yano Omami.
O Yano Omami.
How would that?
Omami.
Yano.
Yano Omami. That's the creator with an A on the end. Omami.
Por isso que
nós temos o nome Yanoman. Yanoman.
That's why we have the name Yanoman.
Yan é casa.
Yano é casa. Is house.
Yan or casa.
I love that. In the Celtic tradition?
O a terra redonda.
And O represents
como assim?
Circular, like
como
this.
Assim?
Oh,
aí
Omam. Omam. Omam é o creator.
Então nós concluir Omam fez o nosso nome, então vai ser já a casa, então já no Omam.
So Omam is created, so that's why Yano Omam. Yano.
So does the Yano mean like the people of, or
Yano
the...
is the circular house,
but,
yeah.
In the Gaelic, it's called, the word for it is Tuatha De Danann, meaning the tribe of the mother Danu, the same thing that the collective.
Tuatha
De Danann. The tribe of Danu.
O coração só.
We only have one heart.
Yes.
Mas é peles diferentes.
We have different colored skin.
Peles diferentes. Se vocês nasceram num lugar frio.
You were born in a cold place.
Se pele gelo.
And so when I'm in the sun, I turn red.
When I lay in the sun, I see the vermelho.
E eu, Yanomami.
He is the Yanomami.
My son.
Lugar... onde o mami nasceu, então é lugar que...
In the place where o mami is created and
formed,
it's a hot place.
Yes.
That's why I have a different
skin. I would be burnt all the time.
E ele ia lá, ele ia ficar muito queimado lá.
My son... okay, oh, there's so many things I want to ask.
If you have a few short
questions. Yeah, recently. I already answered on the about the creator. Are there also equivalents in the tribe of what would be considered separate deities in some cultures, like the mother, the father? There's just the one? Just the one. Okay, cool. And what do the Yanomami say happens after you die?
A pergunta para mim é quando morre um Yanomami, o que acontece com ele? Depois da morte. Quando nós Yanomami morre, ele vai no bole, vai ficar uma bole. Ele vai para outro lugar. A alma dele, ele vai para outro lugar onde o povo que morreu anos passados, 500 anos passados que morreram, ele está esperando nós chegar lá. Então, o Yanomami que morre de doença, de velho, então, ele vai deixar corpo e ele vai no pole, no céu. Lá tem outra terra lá. Essa aí é a terra segredo, sagrado. Segredo e sagrado. Só o índio vai lá. O nato morre, eu não sei para onde ele vai. Tem dois caminhos. E é nossa alma que vai para encontrar nossas mães, nós temos um lugar só. O lugar está só para os índios. Não tem mais homem branco lá onde nosso lugar do morte que está lá.
I know, we're getting to the end.
So when we Yanomami die, we go to what we call Bola, to another place. Our soul goes to this other place where our ancestors are waiting for us, and 500 years ago, even longer, they're waiting for us to arrive. So when a Yanomami dies of old age or illness, they leave their body behind, and they go to this place, Bola, Bola. And Bola is in the sky. It's another land there. And it's secret and it's sacred. Only the indigenous peoples go there. The white people, when they die, they don't know where they'll go. So in a sense, it's like two paths for our souls.
Right.
The path of the white and the path of where we go. And when we go to this place, we meet our mothers and lots of other people. But it's a place only for the indigenous people. There are no non-indigenous people there. Maybe one last question.
Yeah, one last question. Do you want to believe that you can communicate with the ancestors who are already over there in Bole?
Ali os Yanomami vivos, eles podem comunicar com os ancestrais que moram nesse lugar sagrado de Bole.
São Bajé.
Ali os xamãs.
Bajé pode comunicar.
Os xamãs que comunicam com eles.
Well, I suppose we should wrap it up. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. This is Five Rivers Radio Hour. Really amazing hour. And Davi, thank you so much.
Obrigado.
Thank you.
Vamos lutar
juntos.
Thank you very much. Let's fight together.
Yes, absolutely.
Please.
Absolutely. And say your name in the mic, Jessica.
My name is Fiona Watson.
Fiona Watson.
Fiona, your listeners may know
the Gallic name. I love Fiona, that's a beautiful name. Well, that's it, y'all. We'll see you next week on Five Rivers Radio Hour. This is your host, Michael Gorman, signing off. Take care. I want to give this...